The economy, they said, should be organized collectively, whether it was rurally or urban factories. And everyone, they said, should be free and equal in society, in wealth, before the law. Sometimes they would try to argue these views directly to peasants. They'd simply try to walk into a peasant house and say, I'd like to talk to you about politics, about the church being backward, about the landlord being evil, about the czar. Many decided this was a little risky and took a more indirect approach. For example, they would translate their ideas into religious terms. They would quote from the Gospels, or they liked to tell stories about how Christ, a carpenter, not a member of the elite, was portrayed. They would tell how Christ was a spiritual father of all revolutionaries. And they also liked to make up little peasant folktales, or in the style of folktales, that ended with certain messages. The rich are exploiters. The state has no need for it. And everybody has to live as equals. Peasants responded to this in a rather mixed way. There were some positive responses from peasants. After all, in a certain sense, they agreed, at least with the argument that they needed all the land and should be left alone by the state. Sometimes, though, peasant willingness to agree with these people turned out to be rather deceptive. For example, a peasant might invite this student pretending to look like a peasant. They knew perfectly well they weren't. They didn't even talk like peasants. Into their home, they might sit down, say, oh, thank you for this pamphlet, very nice. And even say he would read it, but of course he couldn't because he was generally literate. It was considered polite. One didn't want to be rude. Besides, peasants discovered quickly that these pamphlets made very good cigarette paper. Most often, though, peasants simply listened politely to what the students had to say and showed no interest whatsoever. And a few even showed open hostility, especially when these students began to criticize the church or the czar, and even turned some of these students over to the local police, or even beat them up. Overall then, especially in relationship to expectations, this movement was a failure. Peasants refused to believe criticisms against the czar. True, the landlords were devils. The priests were even devils. But the czar would soon take care of them and give them all the land. Tsar father would take care of them. Student radicals also found, even more troubling to many of them, problems with what they described as peasant fatalism, as peasant submissiveness. In fact, some peasants even tried to explain this to these propagandists. As one peasant put it to one of these students, peasants had to endure hardship, offense, and foul treatment because they were, as this peasant put it, drunkards to a man or had forgotten God. In other words, they were themselves to blame for their sufferings. Now, in the wake of this summer, which was known as the Mad Summer by some of 1874, populists were a little confused and uncertain over what to do next. And gradually, two answers began to emerge, creating actually a split. First, these answers were debated within an organization that had been formed in 1876 called Land and Liberty, but gradually it led to a split into two organizations following these two strategies as to what to do. One answer, more education. Peasants are backward. One needs to organize more schools. One needs to help them understand what needs to be done in Russia. And this organization, the organization that advocated this, which was formed finally in 1879, called itself Black Repartition, this term peasants like to use, Chorny Peredel in Russian. Another group, also forming a separate party in 1879 that called itself People's Will, Narodnaya Volya, favored what it called propaganda of the deed, which is to say, terror. Now, terror, it's worth saying, was very popular. In fact, People's Will attracted far more members than Black Repartition. And it even attracted some surprising sympathy from liberals in Russian society, especially when truly hated reactionary officials were killed. This parting of the ways was getting greater and greater between the educated and the state, as the popularity of terrorism suggests. Now, historians have tried in various ways to explain why terror was so popular. One answer is it was simply satisfying. It actually accomplished something, unlike everything else radicals and even liberals had been trying to do. And indeed, it had many results. Many officials, as I indicated, were killed, and in 1881, the Tsar himself. It also was said to be a reflection of a faith, a false one, that the peasants were ready to rebel. They just needed to be inspired. And in particular, they needed to be shown that the state was not invulnerable, that in fact, people could be killed, damage could be done, and this would inspire peasants to act.